This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris.
Bookie presents Shake Them Ropes. Use code ROPES, double your first deposit up to $1,000. More thanking them later. Jeff Hawkins, Chris Novembrito, and
thank you, Chris.
One more time.
Thank you, Chris.
Never forget.
All that Chris has done for the show. May he rest in peace. No,
I can't believe they did that, Jeff.
For those who may not have watched SmackDown yet, part of the tribute to Pat Patterson was one voice saying, "Thank you, Pat."
Overdubbed like 20 or 30 times with no difference in the inflection. What you heard here off the Casio?
Thank you, Chris.
Only marginally worse than what they came up with.
I understood the My Way video. Maybe don't put a picture of him with children up there as part of the flashback.
More especially on that. Especially saying bit. I did it my way.
Yeah. Can we give a touching tribute on WWE television just once? Between this and the Undertaker retirement, I don't know, Chris. This company likes to have its emotional distance, let's say.
Well, I think this is hard kind of, in a weird way. It's hard, like, Undertaker's was hard and having them back-to-back because I think Vince is really feeling his mortality, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's why you didn't get more of a speech from Vince either this time around. Although, in terms of, like, in-ring importance, obviously Undertaker's more important. But in terms of backstage importance and being a backstage person for Vince McMahon, I feel like Pat Patterson was owed that from Vince.
Pat Patterson's a genius. Pat Patterson is a wrestling genius in terms of finishes, in terms of creativity. He invented the Royal Rumble. Very well known as Vince's main finish guy for a number of years. Also the first Intercontinental Champion. I'll kind of push back a little on Chris. It's not as important in the ring, but I get it. He's not as well known as many of the in-ring performers. But yes, the first Intercontinental Champion. At an imaginary tournament in Rio de Janeiro, as I recall, he was crowned.
Which they mentioned multiple times. So, like, to your point about can you get a serious tribute for Pat Patterson, I think, they diminish his legacy by bringing up the tournament in Rio, which Pat would have been delighted by, I'm sure. But, anyone who looks into it goes, oh, that was a fake tournament that never even happened?
Pat Patterson, a big fan of the work rate guys, so to speak, backstage, big in terms of modern talent, big fan of both Dolph and Daniel Bryan and the others. His enduring legacy will obviously probably be the Royal Rumble in terms of major accomplishments that are known and a whole bunch not known. Also, basically, Vince McMahon's Guy Friday, would you say, number two, consigliere. Would that be a good word for him?
Yeah.
At times?
Utility man.
Bag man, if you want to. You cannot cannot talk about the positives of Pat Patterson without talking about a few of the negatives. Originally fired in the wake of the sexual harassment and ring boy scandal in 91 and 92, later rehired when the company found he had done nothing wrong and charges were dropped. Patterson also, according to Wrestling Observer's obituary, he is the one who called George Zahorian from a payphone, told him to shred all his medical records pertaining to WWF talent in the steroid scandal. Indeed, when Zahorian was arrested in his office, he was destroying such records at Patterson's request. Pat Patterson very famously once said about steroids, "The boys need their candy." Not the best. Look, wrestling is I say this a lot when old wrestlers die. You have to take the good and the bad together. You can't just take one or the other. And wrestling has always been a business with a layer of scum on it in some ways. And Pat Patterson.
And hangers on.
And hangers on. And Pat Patterson was part of that culture, the old boys culture, you know, the kind of immature locker room culture that permeated through even the Attitude Era. Most famous on screen probably as one of Vince's stooges with Jerry Briscoe. Tremendously entertaining in that role, I thought.
And that role was a rib based on their function backstage.
Yes. A number of tributes, including John Moxley's promo this week, where he's saying the crowd will go banana. Pat Patterson, being a French-Canadian, had certain malapropisms in the English language. That was one of them. But yeah, any other thoughts on Pat Patterson? I've really kind of tried to play it even here in terms of positive and negative with him. I have strong opinions on both.
Well, you pushed back earlier on my take that Patterson's more important in terms of his impact on wrestling outside of the ring than inside of the ring. Is the best Pat Patterson match, in your opinion?
I didn't want to discount his in-ring accomplishments because I believe really big draw.
I just think, like, you know, you talk about the Royal Rumble, like the Patterson's lasting impact on the business is felt in his
post wrestling generations.
Career.
Yes.
Yeah. Even like move styles and stuff. I don't think he's not like a guy like Rick Rude, whose selling style influenced a bunch of people, or like Ric Flair, just overall work style.
Not to that extent. He was a fixture in the San Francisco wrestling scene when wrestling was more localized. I believe he was a tag team partner of Ray the Crippler Stevens. Don't quote me on that. I'm just going from memory, and I don't have his Wikipedia up, nor do I want to. He also not a big fan of the what do you like to call the Cirque du Soleil style of modern wrestling, which I found very interesting because he is a big work rate psychology guy. But not a fan of modern style, per se, in terms of how it's evolved. So, yeah, I think you're probably right. And I think his enduring legacy, if not Vince McMahon's hatchet man, bag man, consigliere.
It's very hard for me to divorce him and Gerald Briscoe from that role because it was such a huge function of what they did in their peak days. Backstage, when they were at the peak of their influence, shall we say, they were serving as bagmen.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's no other way. And it was part of the culture. You're either complicit or you're fired. So, I mean, even if it was done under duress, it doesn't make it right. You know.
No, so, but yeah, I mean, for anyone who's familiar with the locker room culture of WWF into WWE between, you know, 1990 and, let's say, 2008, like, you know, Patterson and Briscoe very much served a big function in the maintenance and the operation within that culture.
Yes, it gave Vince McMahon disconnect and also ears in the locker room. So, yeah, I mean, Stooges gonna stooge. The name was somewhat appropriate, but at the same time, he has passed away after a battle with cancer. Attention must be paid. And look, I love the Royal Rumble. I thought it was genius the first time I saw it. I saw the first one, I believe, 87 or 88 on the USA Network. I love the idea of a battle royale where not everybody starts at once. There's certain strategy that can be played there. And for me, if anybody in entertainment has half that legacy, they'd be happy with it, I think.
Yeah. I don't have much more to add.
I don't either.
On Patterson.
I really don't.
I'm
stretching it out just a little bit here so I can get my notes up for other things here. Braun Strowman. Thank you, Chris. I don't know what to thank you for, but I will thank you.
Just, if you want, we can do a murmuring moment of silence. We can pipe in.
Of silence because Hawkins was insensitive during his obituary of Pat Patterson. Braun Strowman out with a knee injury. That's the reason for this booking right now. We'll see how that rehabs. I don't have any further information other than that. I don't know the extent of it. I think he's just going to get a little bit of rest until TLC, to be honest with you.
Okay. Yeah. I don't have any other thoughts on that.
Cool. WWE in partnership with AmeriCares won best COVID-19 awareness program. Her campaign in this year's Synopsis Media Model D Awards. Together, WWE and AmeriCares helped to educate and provide resources for COVID-19 response and relief efforts. This coming off the same day the news hit that an NXT performer had COVID, but it will not affect NXT War Games. Chris, I am teeing this up for you.
You know, it's almost too easy, Jeff. It really is.
Are you kidding me with these fake corporate awards? Educate on COVID-19, Chris?
You know who's in the business of making these fake awards now? Which is kind of new to me. I didn't realize this. Guinness Book of World Records now is someone you can actually contact and like get it for corporate events and get like set stupid Guinness records and have them come there and certify it. And,
well,
you know,
if you make a donation to the charity involved, they will give you a reward. I mean, and that's usually what these are. I mean, it's a little more. Although Who's Who in America is the biggest scam in America. Let me just put that out there. I'm actually in one volume. But all that is you pay money and you're put in Who's Who. They do this a lot with like students. You are one of the most, you're the 1% of top students. How'd you like to be in this directory or whatever? It's ridiculous. But on the bigger front, corporate, what is it? She said philanthropy is the new marketing. This is all this is.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
This is all this is. Because I want to know how they educated me on COVID-19.
Well, I'd like to know the process of vetting different candidates, who else was under consideration this year. There are obviously a lot of different organizations that
have
done a
fine job.
Maybe it was
just diseases that were under consideration. Like, maybe there was, like, a bubonic plague, although that happened in L.A. So maybe awareness of the bubonic plague was not on the top tier of disease. You know, the Red Death. That could Captain Trips under consideration for best disease of 2020. Now we gotta give it to COVID-19. Who's been dealing with that? How about WWE? I read this and I went, what?
They have such nerve. On some level, you almost admire the audacity, but on another level, it's. It's only so funny because this is a company that has been very sloppy and in denial about COVID-19 and its impact, and they wanted to keep running shows, and they wanted to run WrestleMania all the way up until the state of Florida. The state of Florida, of all states, was like, no, you really shouldn't. And then they didn't. This is not a company that has been really cool about COVID safety and really been thinking about the best way to make the safest environment. Even the glass stuff they were sort of dragged into. Even wearing masks out there, they got dragged into because they had an outbreak and then they started wearing the masks. Like nearly every adjustment they have made after like the first ones that you had to make because COVID was happening Where each one was prompted because of a mini outbreak.
Yeah. They've been more reactionary than proactive in every sense of the word here. I'm just trying to think, did they ever do public service announcements?
Nope. I've messaged you about how, you know, for example, The Fiend is a very popular character that you're pushing heavily on the show right now. And, like, they haven't even been marketing Fiend-style COVID safety masks, which would be good branding for their company, good marketing for their company, because someone's wearing it on their face, would look like a cool product that a kid would want to own and would want to wear and would be, like, cool and forward-looking on COVID safety and something that you could tout. When you're giving yourself fake awards.
WWE used to be able to tout on tout until
speaking of other bad marketing moves. I guess, like, it's frustrating on that level too, because they've really been this deep, you nailed it, a reactionary company, and when there have been so many different opportunities, like, for example, running WrestleMania, as we were mentioning, and doing a decent chunk of it for charity or doing COVID fundraising. At no point have they done that. This company is not cool about COVID safety.
They had reports that they wanted fans in the fall.
That's right. That's right.
I'm astounded. I'm just... And I don't even mind if they got an award. The brazenness of...
They don't deserve an award, is the point.
They don't deserve it, and know that. But just the mere posturing of, look at this award we got. It's almost... You almost want to give them credit for the troll. You know?
That's what I'm saying. Like, on some level, I almost love the audacity of acting like they've been doing a good job.
It's like if they tweeted, look at the great job we've done in labor relations, and they just put that out there as an award, and you're just like, really? You know, or social media, social media expansion. It's just... Oh, it's anger-inducing, and I can't speak intelligently anymore on it, other than just to say it's garbage. And because I like to throw in one news story that throws you off, the company filed a trademark for Friendship Frog, so he looks becoming a recurring character. They are looking at doing Friendship Frog clothing. I will also mention that it appears that the Walrus character, based on Paul Lee, will no longer be on the Firefly Funhouse due to the fact that there is no Roman program, but we are getting Friendship Frog, 40 years old, single, monocle, top hat, probably having a midlife crisis at this point.
Yeah, well, he's in the friend zone. That's part of what's bothering Friendship Frog.
Good Lord, that ending. Let's get rid of the main roster and maybe anything NXT UK, because Wednesday is obviously the more interesting of the two things to talk about. The end segment with The Fiend and Randy Orton, and Orton treating Alexa Bliss as a child.
Yeah.
What?
And then The Fiend begging, and, like, now he's sort of it. This company, man, and it's just inconsistent babyface heel dynamic stuff. Who's the face in that feud? It's Randy, right? Randy's the babyface.
I don't know.
I don't know. Because they were really playing up that The Fiend was begging. And if The Fiend's begging and he cares about somebody and he cares about, like, a woman of all things, like, he might be romantically interested and what?
Chris, I think we are full on. And I don't know. I may ask, because it's gotten to the point where a lot of character motivation logic is so screwed up. See Rey Mysterio last week interfering in matches. I think we may be back in the shades of gray period, where there are no faces and heels. There's just various shades of gray, where good guys will do bad things because it's in self-interest and it won't make any sense to us, but it makes sense to them in their internal logic. I just don't know, because this one is is like Randy was scared last week, and this week he's like staring down Alexa being cray cray, and they're just like carrying her around like a child. And I think Alexa Bliss is doing a fine job with it's chicken salad.
Yeah, no, I don't dislike her character. I don't dislike her character. It's like she's doing a fine job playing it out. She's a stupid character.
Okay, that was an interesting stop right there. I was just like, and no.
And, well, no, there is no and there. It's just like, that's it. That's all.
Oh,
there
that's
is.
Fine. That's fine. Yeah. Yeah, we already got problems, as I alluded to last week, with the Hurt Business.
There was all the throwing shade on Shelton Benjamin by Cedric Alexander.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, your boys. Take a victory lap for your boy Slapjack.
Hold on.
Do you have a Slapjack song?
Thank you, Slapjack.
Thank you, Slapjack.
A big win over can't miss star Ricochet.
No, I mean, okay, for years I covered Lucha Underground, and Prince Puma was a key star on Lucha Underground. He had a lot of great matches, and I've, of course, been a big fan of Mr. Jack for a long time. And been following all of Mr. Jack's work since he's entered the wrestling world.
And his brothers Flap and Black.
Yeah.
And UConn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There are many Jacks. There really are. And his sister Jill. But never in my wildest dreams did I imagine worlds would collide. And the modern day everyman Slapjack would prevail over a prince. But a king always beats a prince. That's what I say.
Yeah,
but Slapjack is a king.
He's a jack.
Yeah, but a jack beats a prince.
What?
He's like King Jack.
He's a King Jack.
He's a King Jack.
Oh, that's, you know what? He needs to win King of the Ring now.
Yeah.
King.
Oh,
king,
I like that. I
king,
like that.
King
get
Slappy.
Get this man. Yeah, King Slap.
He just walks around backstage smacking.
Okay, but that is actually not a bad Friday Night SmackDown angle to just do for like 6 months where he just slaps somebody.
King Slap walking around slapping guys.
And then the fourth block, he has a match.
Yeah, he slaps Adam Pearce. They make him go out to the ring. And God, we're giving him ideas. The Retribution mostly relegated to main event last week, along with I just, and God bless him, he's doing another chicken salad thing. Is Ali trying to make sense of all this and really kind of doing a good job in these promos, but they're not leading anywhere.
Because they can't get booked strong enough. Or with strong enough wins for this group to really be a credible threat at all. Reckoning is already a weak link here and is being made an example of.
Don't get me wrong. I'm just going to go out on a limb here. I think that's Mia Yim. Because he lost the mask. And because it's live television, we can't mention that. I think these are just part of the story.
If Murphy didn't recognize the guy he was once tag team champions with, how am I supposed to recognize? I don't know who Reckoning is. That's speculative. You're speculating.
That's my favorite part of the show, was halfway through the match, Corey Graves, that appears to be Steve Cutler, and who used
to
be the Forgotten
Sons. He was definitely reading
Sons.
Twitter while he was doing the commentary.
Master storytellers in the WWE. I just... Oh, my God. Oh, it hurts so bad. Anything else on Raw before I go into my little SmackDown rant?
I'm just trying to see if there was anything else worth mentioning here. Slapjack beat Prince Puma. I think that is that's an important.
Oh, we had
headline.
A match announced for TLC. Lana and Asuka once again facing the women's tag champs. No stipulation as yet, Chris, but can you probably guess what this is going to be?
I bet you this is going to be the tables match.
What?
No, here's the thing. The tables match really should be Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns. And even, like, Owens was sort of alluding to that in his promo tonight where he said, like, oh, you're the head of the table. Well, bring the ladders and chairs, too.
Oh, I'm here for Lana and Asuka being in a stairs match or something that has nothing to do with tables. And just see them try and, well, you know, she's been through enough tables. We need another.
We're going to try to put her through stairs.
Oh, and it's the third time, which means probably the blow off of this ridiculous feud. Even though they beat him twice.
And I think Lana and Asuka win here.
Do you think they pull the trigger on this?
Because
I got the feeling that it was like week one. It's like, all right, we're going to do this match and set them up as the contenders. And then we're going to rerun it again. And they win again. So the third time is when they lose. And then just all our investment in this entire story is wasted.
You know, you're just being you're being a negative Nancy here.
Do I have a reason to be positive? A positive
Slapjack colleague. Defeated Prince Puma on Raw this week.
So mid-card push for Slapjack?
Mania.
Drew McIntyre match?
Yeah, no, I think this is built into a McIntyre versus champion Slapjack match.
Do we know why Slapjack joined Retribution yet?
I think he's working all of them.
No, go on. Go on, because I don't want to cut this off. Please, give me the story. The ballad. No. Hold on. The Shake Them Ropes Theater is back, baby. And this time it's Chris Novembrino with the ballad of Slapjack.
All right, so you're familiar with the movie from the 90s, The Usual Suspects,
yes.
That has Kaiser Soze. Mm-hmm. This isn't necessarily like that in any substantial way, but I think Slapjack he deliberately nerfed someone who looks suspiciously like Mia Yim, who is, of course, Reckoning, and was wrestling this week. And you'll notice that T-Bar never gets a match. Why is that, Jeff?
I don't know. You're telling the story.
No, someone's pulling the strings. Someone's pulling the strings.
So you think that Ali's not the real leader. It's really Slapjack.
Yeah, Ali's the mouthpiece. You know, are you familiar with the idea of the strong, silent type in history?
No, Chris, tell me more.
A lot of times, they will speak softly, and yet they'll carry a big stick. There was one of the presidents was into that.
Roosevelt, I think.
Yeah. I'm history's great. Yeah. No, history's awesome. Yeah.
That's the story you got? Okay.
Yeah, I think this ends with him winning Mania, winning Rumble. Big push. Yeah.
Oh, before we move on, let's take a break and thank our sponsors at MyBookie. Between the NFL and college ball, there's no shortage of games to watch, and with thousands of lines available on your favorite sports and events, you can turn your game day into payday with MyBookie. If you're the type of guy who likes to back the big favorites, consider putting a couple in a parlay for a much bigger payout. Not only do parlays make meaningless games exciting, but more importantly, they give you a chance to turn ordinary bets into a real moneymaker. And don't forget the underdogs. They have a ton of value. For example, if they're playing Virginia in basketball. The thing about the NFL is that underdogs are never really dogs on Sunday. Every team truly has a chance to win, and you do too. Game spreads, championship futures, and player prop bets. It's never too late to get in on the action. Start turning your sports knowledge into actual cash in your wallet. Sign up at mybookie.ag, and when you do, use our promo code ROPES, R-O-P-E-S, to claim a deposit match dollar for dollar all the way up to $1,000. It's a bonus designed to give you a little help and a head start on your winning season. That's promo code ROPES for you to claim your bonus when you make your deposit. Stacked UFC cards, presidential prop bets, because they still haven't paid out. They still haven't paid out at the major sports books. All the major sports and more. Sign up today to begin your winning season exclusively at MyBookie. And we thank them for sponsoring Shake Them Ropes and other shows here at Voices of Wrestling. All right. It's time to get my anger out and my fury. Bayley, longest reigning SmackDown women's champ of all time. Getting beat quite a bit here to build up Natty in anticipation of this tribute to the troops match, which I just assume it's a tag match between Sasha and Bianca Belair taking on Bayley and Natty. And I assume Natty's going to take the pin after Bayley walks out on her. But are we just going to cool her off until Rumble season? Because I assume she's probably winning Rumble and then try and heat her up again for another Sasha match.
If you think we're getting back into an era of Shades of Grey, like when you say Shades of Grey, what I hear in parentheticals is week to week. And I don't know that there's a ton of thought about what these angles are about from week to week. And you really felt that with Carmella and Sasha Banks, where those two were talking about nothing for 3 minutes.
Good Lord, that was bad.
Oh, it was
awful.
And I
love Sasha. And I love Carmella.
Yeah, no, Carmella can be very entertaining. No, but that was, it was nails on a chalkboard, absolutely awful. It was very, very bad.
You know what it is? And we'll get into this a bit when we talk AEW a little. It's the difference between, they're not storytelling per se. They're looking at who they're protecting in this week and who they're making strong in this week. So
right.
It's one of those things where it's like, well, all right, Bayley got beat, but it's anticipation of this tag match where she'll walk out and look strong again. And we need to build up Natty because we're probably beating her next week. As opposed to what's the story we're telling? The story we should be telling is we're building up a third major star on the SmackDown brand in Bianca Belair. And they didn't do it during Survivor Series. I don't care how people watched that match. That was not a strong showing by Bianca Belair that makes her into someone who can carry the division or someone you want to see in a one-on-one big-time match necessarily. It was the character of Bianca, you know, didn't get beat, ergo she's strong, and that's backstage thinking. That's not storytelling thinking.
Yeah, I barely remember the way that the Survivor Series match finished.
I will give it to you because I have it on the brain. Let's see. Ruby Riott gets knocked out by Shayna Baszler after the Carafuna clutch is held on to too long.
Oh, and she like rolls over.
Bianca comes in, and then Shayna gets the Carafuna clutch on her, but doesn't let go after the five count and gets disqualified. And then she gets into a brawl with Nia on the outside, and both get counted out.
Cool.
Which then leaves Lana as the sole survivor.
We're saying that made Bianca strong.
We're saying that made Bianca strong and really helped Lana's character.
I mean, really more than anything, Bianca would need to have like a main event match on Raw or something like that that gets like 20, 30 minutes.
I think that would
help more.
I think even if we eliminated this entire Natty story and we build a real feud between, because you can still beat Bayley. She has been given a whole lot of credibility on this year-long run. She has shown she can carry a division. But you can't beat her week to week. You have to space out the rub that she's been given to different people. It's like after the Brock beating the streak thing, they were going to give that to Roman eventually after winning, and then they decided not to. So it turned into a mess on all counts, and nobody ended up getting built from that. You could have a nice long match with Bianca and Bayley, where Bianca beats Bayley. And then she's given that credibility. But instead, we've decided to go a little clever here, and we're going to have her beat Natalya after getting, like, walked
what
out
of
What
does beating Natalya mean in 2020, though?
I don't know.
She's not been a serious... When's the last time she's even been champion? But, like, you know, she's... a low-level gatekeeper person. And
she's the Big Show of the women's division.
Yeah.
Because she just turns every 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be interested to see how many heel face turns she's had. Somebody get on that math and let me know.
Oh, God. She's got to be up to, like, I would say at least 10 or 12 here over the last 7 or 8 years.
I would agree. Yeah. I think it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, like Luger, like Big Show, you just don't care anymore because it's just like, okay, we're going to get this run for a while. She's going to talk about her cats, and then she's going to turn heel. And then she's going to call herself great for a few weeks, and eventually she's going to get pummeled by another act, and then she's going to turn face. Because that's what she is right now. I just find the character dull, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, and to your point, when you flip someone multiple times, you don't care what happens to them either way. And that's definitely the way I feel about Natty. And some people can work their way past that point, but it's asking a lot of people, and not everyone can do that.
And a quick note about NXT UK. I enjoy this kind of mini push the Hunt is getting. I liked the promo video.
Yeah.
I liked that match with Flash Gordon Webster and Mark Andrews. Yeah, I like this.
Every week I sit in the dark in my closet and imagine this television show that I call NXT UK. And there has been, let me tell you, just an unbelievable amount of wrestling on this show. And I've really been enjoying what I've been imagining lately. This whole show that was centered around the Hunt and Eddie Dennis doing good promos and not being goofy. I had a very good time imagining this week.
You want to give reference to that?
Well, everyone seems to think that
it's an imaginary show.
Who's the guy who was on, the one time? Garrett.
Garrett.
He made that joke, and other people have made that joke too. I'm just going all out with it. I imagine this show every week in the dark in a closet with no heat for several hours. This is a figment of my imagination.
A noteworthy night, Wednesday night, in terms of wrestling. Go home show for the big end of year NXT takeover. AEW's big event, Winter is Coming, made for TNT, built around the Jon Moxley-Kenny Omega match, did the company's best demo numbers of the year, once again reading from the Wrestling Observer, including beating Raw in the male 18-34 demo and beating SmackDown in women 18-34, but it didn't beat either show overall 18-34. But what it did was it got 913,000 viewers and a 0.42 in the 18-49. Best AEW showing of the year.
NXT, what didn't they do like a million in like back in September?
The demo figure was the best.
Oh,
okay.
The demo is impressive.
No, it is. And then then NXT did. I'm looking for this, and I can't find the exact number on this. I don't think I copy and paste it here on my notes, but it looks like... Oh, they did 689,000 viewers with 200... Or the main event did 689 with 221,000, 18-49. They got waxed in the demo. I think it was like 0.14 or something ridiculous like that. Look, Sting being one of the major talking points coming out of this show... Tony Schiavone exuding glee like I haven't heard in a very long, long time at Sting. I don't know if they smartened him up to him coming out, but an interesting segment, adding another veteran presence to the TNT and a guy known for TNT wrestling after getting misused in his stint in WWE, in my opinion. I don't know if he has many matches left in him. I don't know if I want many matches left.
No, I don't know that I want many matches out of him, and I'm already a little worried in terms of, is this going to be a longer-term run, or maybe did they shoot their load? I was worried when they said next week we're doing Sting Speaks, because Sting Speaks Every time they do this, it's like I've seen several Sting speaks. They're always duds. Sting is at his best when he says nothing.
And hits guys with bats.
Yes. Yeah. And what I would do is, if I was AEW, is I would avoid doing him actually speaking next week. And maybe even take that moment to, like, quote-unquote traumatize Sting to make him not want to speak or say anything and only speak through actions. Because that's how you're going to get the most out of him. And to your point, Jeff, I don't know that he needs to have a match. In fact, Sting was the most over when he wasn't having matches at all.
Then how do you use him in a wrestling company?
A Deus Ex Machina, like, plot device, like, that Sting's around. Like, he's like a spirit that kind of haunts the Federation in a way.
Like Spectre in the DC Universe, I know.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Do you know that reference?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't. I'm yes-anding.
Jesse. Well, Spectre is a cop who died in the line of duty and then acts as exacting justice within the DC universe. So you have that kind of supernatural force, I guess, who rights wrongs when necessary. How about that?
Yeah, right. Like, he's almost like a Jack Tunney type figure, but like a modern day version of the Jack Tunney figure. Like, at any point, Sting could come out. And when things are getting really messed up, there's always this hope that maybe Sting will be the one to come down there and right the wrong. I think less is more with him. I don't want him to have in-ring matches. And I think, yeah, the less he says, the better.
Not unless it's against Tully Blanchard. Then I'll watch. But, yeah, maybe a six-man as a special event one time. He gets in, he does the Stinger Splash, Scorpion, Death Drop, 1, 2, 3. But less will be more, so to speak, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. His matches, even in, like, the last decade, they've not been very deep in terms of movesets or anything like that. For the type of show that AEW does in terms of matches, I think it'd be hard to hide how limited Sting is in a singles match on AEW's product.
Yes, the other major news coming out of this, Kenny Omega, now your AEW champion. Screwjob finish with the help of one Don Callis of Impact Wrestling. The end of the night, eyeballs were drawn to Kenny's appearance on Impact Wrestling on Tuesday nights on Access. I will not opine right now. I will allow you your opinion here, Chris, before I say anything. Please give me your opinion on this.
So I think on one level, you have to admire how Impact Wrestling manages to hang on the precipice of death without ever dying and always finding ways to stay relevant. Now going into their third decade. Like, they're way more relevant than they should be. They should have gone under as a company a gazillion times, but, like, they have some degree of continuity. I think for their part of this, this is great. For Don Callis's part, like, this is a masterstroke. For AEW's part, I think that this hurts the prestige of the title because Omega's character is not a serious Ric Flair traveling heel champion character, despite how he was dressing himself up last week. He's like kind of a goofy banana peel, full of himself, touting all of his like hollow accolades sort of guy. And this finish was so weak in terms of building him. Even the screw title change, the big ones back in the day, like when they would do a screw to really build the heel champion, the screw would feel like big. It'd feel like a really big moment. Callis getting the mic into Kenny Omega came and went so fast that it you almost didn't see it. He's like, oh, what happened? Oh, he hit him with the mic, I guess. That's not how you make a strong traveling heel champion, in my opinion. And I don't think Omega's a good promo. And I think doing this sort of traveling heel champion angle involves a lot of plot and a lot of talking being moved through the traveling heel champion. And I don't think Omega has been demonstrating a real strength when it's been coming to promo.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3-second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Most lately.
Well, I think that's why Callis may be with this act, and they may be doing a Heenan Bockwinkle type of thing. Even though to compare Kenny Omega to Nick Bockwinkle. Yeah, I know. I know.
I don't.
If you haven't watched those promos ever from the AWA guys.
No, they're awesome. They're my favorite promos. And I don't dislike Don Callis, but Bobby Heenan, he is not.
I felt it was a little too close to being WWE-like in terms of the screwing the champ type thing and then running out of the building like Montreal. Just a tad. I do think Impact is in one of its better positions in terms of talent roster of people I like in a long, long time. You have, if there is a working relationship here, and this is what I tend to think. I tend to think a lot of this cooperation is to show AEW as more as the anti-WWE again, where we will work with smaller companies to help build them up and make, you know, rising tide raises all boats, even though what fans really want is AEW and New Japan to work together. But, you know, I will take a North versus FTR match, please. You know, you probably have some interaction with the Good Brothers in some way with the Young Bucks.
Yeah, no, I think it spruces up divisions. It allows for a little bit of rotation from shows. It allows AEW to essentially get free cameras on their talent and get free content.
You mean TNA or Impact versus AEW? Because I don't understand what AEW gets out of this at all, other than being generous.
Access to the talent, I suppose. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, no, I guess you're right. I think for TNA or Impact gets the... They get the benefit of the cameras, and AEW gets the benefit of an expanded roster, which is a thing they need.
AEW needs an expanded roster or Impact? Because AEW has a bloated roster where they can't use all the guys to the point where they're doing 2.5-hour darks on YouTube.
Are they really?
Guys reps. Yeah, that was what it was last week. I don't know what it was this week.
Whoa. 2.5-hour darks?
Yes.
Longer than Dynamite?
Yes, like
yeah, no,
matches.
I just want to make sure that I'm understanding that, like, Dark is now longer than Dynamite.
Yeah, because you and I skip Dark.
Yeah, we don't watch Dark.
It's one of those things where it's almost a battle of wills, and we'll get into this with NXT a little bit as well, but it's like the online content, having to keep up with that, you know, plus BTE... You know, for NXT, the stuff on WWE.com, it's like you have to keep up. It's almost like they're requiring you, if you want to be a completist, they're going to take up all your time, and it's a battle for, okay, you got to pick one or the other. But the question I was going to lead to originally before I got off on that tangent, thank you, Chris.
Oh, yeah, oh, that was the worst tangent we've ever been on.
I'm sorry,
listeners.
No, I was hoping for the keyboard there. Thank you. timing is impeccable by me today.
I nailed the claps.
Does either... Never mind, there's a joke there, and I'm just going to go through it. Does Sting or the Omega... being champion going to different shows / being the champ, does either expand this pie of about 1.5 million And we'll include Raw and SmackDown in this to 2 million viewers that are actual wrestling fans these days. Or is it just something that fans of the product already are just going to talk about? It'll get them excited. It might bring viewers from one Wednesday show to the other, but it won't expand into wrestling being cool per se.
I think what would get additional eyes on the product is, and I'm aware that this is not what's going to happen, and this is a proposition that will probably upset some of the audience, but an extended angle between Sting and Shaquille O'Neal, who are two people associated with this. You don't even necessarily have to have them touching, but like everyone else on the roster, they're just dudes on a wrestling show. Because, like, wrestling doesn't have that level of cultural saturation that it once did. People still know who Sting is. People don't know who Shaq is. And if you say Shaq's having, like, a feud with Sting and they're doing it on this show, AEW, I think that might get some normie people, so to speak, to watch that angle and check out AEW to see the Sting versus Shaquille O'Neal angle. Does Sting move the needle in and of himself? Not necessarily. But yeah, like, as I said, Shaq might be a tool they could use, and Sting versus Shaq might be a tool that they could use.
Like, to me, a guy who does can't miss promos, you know, if you get two or three of those guys, that will move the needle for me. And I think Moxley is close. I think MJF could be that guy, but he's now... I don't know. He's kind of veering towards the meta a little bit. I just don't know. I don't know what expands an audience base for wrestling, which already has a knock against it for being hokey. Like if you talk to normal people and you talk about professional wrestling, they just go that fake stuff. It doesn't matter how good it is.
I will tell you the common response I get, because I just walked into a gas station this week and I heard on like the radio, the clerk was listening to behind like the glass and everything. He was listening to something that was about wrestling, or at least they were talking about wrestling on the radio.
And did you plug your show, Chris? Come on.
No, I didn't plug the show. No, I'm not that much of a cad.
I am.
Are you? Yeah. No. I'll ask someone if they like wrestling, right? The response I get so often is this phrase: "Back in the day."
Yeah.
Back in the day.
It's cool when I was a kid. When I was a kid,
back in the day.
And I don't know if that's just because children are prone to, you know, talking crap and fake fighting.
Yeah, I mean, there's something about jumping off the top ropes and hitting the elbow drop and stuff that is cool. But, like, I think there's something more to it. Like, the fact that Ric Flair hasn't wrestled a good match in, like, 15 years is... And yet he still has people's imagination, people still do, like, the woo and everything like that. It's a testament, obviously, to the longevity of his career. But people still talk about Macho Man, and Macho Man hasn't been with us for a long time.
Yeah, the iconic character, the strength of character, in addition to being a compelling in-ring performer. And I love AEW, and I know a lot of people have a lot of emotion invested in, well, if you put on good 3-4-star wrestling matches every week and you do something like a PWG super indie on television, it'll draw viewers, and I just have my doubts. I have my doubts about that.
It'd have to be like big promos and stuff, but
yes.
But to jumpstart new eyeballs, pop culture angle. So like, as weird as it sounds, like the Jay Leno stuff and the Karl Malone stuff on WCW, that was part of what got normal people to tune in and see what the hell was going on in that WCW show.
Let's see if he falls on his face. There was kind of that almost like when they watch, like the big thing these days.
Oh,
around the
Mike Tyson, the Mike Tyson, yes, thing. I think that that's a really good example, because God, I got stuck watching that thing over the weekend here. This is not on the show slate, but I got stuck watching that thing, and people were talking about that constantly, and the quality of the work was crappy. It just had
it was a complete work, because there was no way that was a draw.
I mean, I also agree with you on that front. but
the whole thing was to get people sucked in to watch it.
Yeah.
To see if either would get knocked out or if they would really start throwing blows. And then it was an entire work throughout the way to set up for a rematch, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I do. I think it was promoter BS, you know, work enough to be good. And then the judges, which, you know, they said they weren't going to be judging, quote unquote, but we decided to bring in judges anyways, as opposed to it being an exhibition. We're there to basically call it a draw no matter what happened so that people would then buy the next one. But what I was going to say was they were watching Leno and Carl Malone almost as a freak show, much like they watch live musicals on network television to see if anybody screws up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
It's a gawk quality.
In wrestling, though. So that's why I kind of go, is there any staying power to growing the pie or anything?
You have to have a good show built around that angle. So, like, Sting and Shaquille O'Neal are not going to sell AEW for you. You're going to have that as, like, a main event thing. And, or, you know, Jericho and Shaq and Sting involved in some angle. Because Jericho's song's somewhat popular. You have something like that going on in the main event, and then you have other good matches along the way and a signature promo or something. Build something that might draw people, but, like, it takes a long time.
Does AEW get over 1 million next week?
No.
Okay.
No. I'd like for them to prove me wrong, but I think they hit 1 million once. That's basically their cap. I don't see them getting 1 million next week.
Is there anybody on the roster who could cut a promo so compelling that they could grow to 1 million, in your opinion?
I thought MJF at one point this year, and I'm sure he can get back there, but not right now where he's at with this character and this current feud. Like Moxley's promos, don't think he's like a needle mover like that. No.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to be like cruel or mean or anything like that.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot like that.
No, it's a good question. I like good promos.
And it doesn't need to be, you know what, I'm just going to lay this out there. You don't need a large audience. Like, ER used to hit 30 million every week. On network television,
Clooney was dreamy, though.
Yes, I know.
I know. Yeah. I'll never look like him. Look,
Anthony Edwards, you know, everybody loves
him. I'll never
Goose.
Look like him either.
But the thing was, you can now succeed as a niche product. You don't need to necessarily grow out and be, you know, water cooler talk every week. You can be the show that, you know, 1.5 million people.
But you want to see some movement in this brand, right? Like, you know, I'm sure people have gathered this who still listen to this show. We're not the ratings wars guys, and you will not be getting passionate week-to-week coverage of the rating war stuff. Because for me, it's always been about, like, the longer trend. Do they break 1 million? Do they break 1.5 million? Do they break 2? To your point, I don't think they need to, like, be pulling in MASH finale numbers every week, right?
Well, let me cut you off, because you raised my next question before we move on to NXT. Is this a death knell in terms of the balance? I mean, does this 900,000 number continue, or do we go back to more of the, you know, 800 versus 750,000 type viewer levels, or is this 960 to 600 from here on out?
That's what I just have a very hard time seeing it going regularly beyond 1 million.
What I'm saying is, does NXT have a problem in terms of, they've now become old hat, and I do tend
oh
to
yeah
think-
no they've totally become old hat. It's kind of crazy, dude. Like, NXT UK right now feels more like NXT.
It feels more like a wrestling show
than
NXT
does.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it has more of the flavor. So no, NXT US is no longer a hot brand. What I do think AEW's performance is indicative of is that NXT and the Vince strategy for NXT, whatever the booking patterns are that are going on around NXT, have just completely devoured the credibility and the goodwill towards NXT US. And that's a damn shame, because there are good stuff on NXT US, like, for example, Pat McAfee. But, like, the way they do all of the mid-card booking on NXT US is just, it's...
This feels like main roster malaise, and especially, just because you brought that up, the Jake Atlas reboot here.
Oh my god, that promo. Okay, that promo felt like it was from the 1988 Cocaine Before the Promo era. I am so excited! Yes! I won!
A week after getting the enhancement talent entrance, where you just have your name on the Chiron and get crushed, now's the time we gotta reheat up Jake Atlas, who should be a star and should be out there. I get mad about this because AEW wanted to put him on the forefront of what they wanted to be in terms of diversity.
Sure.
Marketing. And he's just a dude who they're trying to build up into another a cruiserweight match with a guy that has so much more star potential, even though his flunkies are now getting beat left and right, which makes him less special in some ways, because that entire stable just looks like one guy in two red shirts.
Yeah, yeah. That's not uncommon, though, whenever they make stables like that.
Other things I liked on NXT, before we get to the preview of War Games here, which we can talk about other things. I liked the simplicity of the build for the strap match. You have an enhancement match. Cameron Grimes beats the win. He brings out the strap. He whips the guy for a couple times. Cuts this promo about, you know, with false bravado and everything, not paying attention to what's going on. Loomis is behind him. And then it freaks him out. He gets whipped a couple times and has to run off. If this feud hadn't been going for 6 months already, this would have been an awesome promo, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I thought the beat was great. And Cameron Grimes as this character is a hoot. And I think they do a good... Because of his match style, whenever they need to rebuild him, he gets rebuilt pretty successfully, I'd say.
I agree.
This is fun. It's still weird that Dexter Loomis is a babyface stalker.
Babyface serial killer, almost, even.
Yes. With some anti-hero connection to the undead anti-hero. Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a... That's the guy. That's the face of our division. That guy right there.
And they zoom in, and the crowd's like, Dexter, Dexter.
Thank you, Dexter. And, you know, and obviously, after that, it's like, well, who else can we get that's a serial killer? How about that slapjack guy who wears a hockey mask?
That guy's not, he's not a serial killer.
He just has weird twitching.
Why would you say that?
Something I liked, but was a complete waste of time. I love Ever-Rise. I want Malcolm Bivens to be their manager. Malcolm Bivens making a very short cameo on this NXT show during the Timothy Thatcher segment.
I liked the after the match promo from Ever-Rise.
Yes.
Where we arrived.
Some of their best stuff is on WWE.com on social media. I retweet it as best as I can. It should be on the TV to explain these guys and their delusional heeldom. I like that they're in the ring. I like that Imperium comes in, kicks their ass, throws them out of the ring. I like having the Grizzled Young Veterans versus Imperium. I like having teams of self-interest eventually colliding. I don't mind heel versus heel matches in that way. What I do mind is 20 minutes of wrestling before Ever-Rise comes in and makes this a total schmoz DQ. It's the correct booking thing. It just is way too much time before pulling the trigger on that.
Right.
Because there's no point to it. There's no story being told here other than these two great teams are eventually going to fight, probably in a three-way where Ever-Rise gets beat.
I would actually
but I love all three of these teams. This strong tag division warms the cockles of my heart, Chris. I love this.
When they tease the three-way match, it makes me think Ever-Rise will get a delusional heel victory here somehow.
I wouldn't mind that either.
I wouldn't mind that at all. I think that would get these two going. I like Grizzly Young Veterans. I like Imperium. I like seeing these guys clash. I'm here for this match.
I almost want them to do a throwback to NXT UK.
Yeah.
Mention their time there to kind of build this history between these two factions not liking each other. But I love all three of these teams. There's not a good guy amongst them. Don't get me wrong. I think so. They'll probably end up like throwing in a Breezango and making it a four-way, which would just
I hate that because I think it's so much more interesting to take these three teams that are all kind of unlikable and decide that you're going to try to emphasize like the positive qualities of one of them. And the easiest one, in my opinion, to do that with is Zach Gibson. Just like Zach Gibson go out there because he's such a compelling talker. He can compel you in either direction.
We'll talk about the rest of a NXT show in our takeover preview. Once again, the usual five matches to keep us interested on paper. It's an interesting card, but again, I don't doubt War Games, and I don't doubt NXT takeovers. I have a problem with War Games in some instance because I've been listening to the Lapsed Fan do their recaps of each year's War Games, and there's a point that was made on there that I feel strongly about. A War Games match should not just be a match you could do in a cage. There should be a point to this, and it should be more vicious, more brutal, more fight-like versus doing big moves off tops of cages and stuff. I like having the top there, but this is what we're going to get every year, and so I have to be happy with that. Opening up, Timothy Thatcher versus Tommaso Ciampa in a singles match. Here for this. Problem is, I didn't want Thatcher tapping out 2 weeks ago to make him weak. I just want two bullies fighting each other here, Chris. What's wrong with that?
I liked that Thatcher got Ciampa out cold here, but that might have even been too much, and you're dead on him tapping out. A couple of weeks ago to Kushida was really kind of ridiculous.
I also like that the students have kind of drank the Kool-Aid.
Well, they can't all be bad students, right? Like it would kill Thatcher if every one of his students was like secretly loathed him. Like, what does that say about Thatcher's intellect?
But we have to keep together to keep, you know, the school requires that we stay together, everybody.
Well, yeah, I think Thatcher just points to Austin Gray and says, like, this guy's not doing anything, or August Gray.
Well, he's paying the dues, you know, monthly dues, and, you know, we need to keep, Thatcher's school is just like an improv theater. He pays the dues to keep the rent going, so we gotta keep him around, even though he's a lousy student.
The Thatcherite Citizens Brigade.
Oh, that pops me and three other people, but it's great. now I want levels. Well, you know, you're not a strong enough student to go to level two of Thatch's Thatch Can. You're going to have to repeat level one, but we'll give it to you at half price.
That'd be great. Like, basic headlocks, like he makes you retake basic headlocks because, like, he quote-unquote finds flaws in your techniques.
I've taken level one three times. Why can't I go to level two with my friends? Well, you got to learn the basics before you can do the advanced work right now.
I just want to see that you care about hammer locks. They're important.
You know, you just don't have the Thatch basics just yet to do deep. I almost said deep scene work, but you know, we have industry coming and we have a reputation to maintain.
Oh. You're out here and you want to do bridging suplexes. You don't understand the fundamentals of a takedown.
You need to learn an ankle lock first before you start doing that fancy stuff.
Single leg crab.
Again.
Other leg.
Who do you have winning this?
In the War Games?
No. Thatcher Chopper. You're already done with this show. The hell with this.
No, I'm not. I'm very into it. I'm into this show. I think that Thatcher beats Ciampa.
Oh. Interference or
yeah,
or
I think like maybe we see the debut of a new student. Like his best student, his star pupil.
I just think Ciampa's too big of a name to beat here. And I just think they just don't view Thatcher. I think they view Thatcher as amusing and they can build him up as a tough guy occasionally, but I don't see where he goes after beating Ciampa. So I just think, Ciampa gets built up to face, who's the champ? I can't remember.
Oh yeah, I know.
Finn Balor.
See, whereas I see Thatcher is the more natural guy. So like Thatcher, okay. if he wins, he can go up against Leon Ruff and say that Leon Ruff's not a legitimate champion, because I think Ruff's going to win that match. Or he can go up against Finn Balor, both of whom are kind of more natural. I wouldn't say more natural, but reasonable and logical fits.
You know what? You've talked me into it. I'm going to change my mind and say Thatcher wins this to get built up for a title match.
Yeah.
Of some point. Okay. I guess he can... You'd always heat up Ciampa at any point because he's such a presence and such a fan.
He's a former champion and like an icon of NXT branding. Yeah, no, he's the guy who does not need the win.
Dexter Lumis versus Cameron Grimes in the aforementioned strap match. I want to know if this is just a pinfall or if this is one of those four corners BS strap matches that you do where you connect the two guys and they have to hit the four corners in order to win. I hate those matches. I hope this is just one fall. But I'll go first here. I think because WWE booking is quite predictable now in NXT, I think because Dexter Lumis got the upper hand, I think Cameron Grimes wins this.
Somehow wins this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To the moon!
To the moon! I got it. He is such a character. Yeah. I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to say Lumis wins. I don't think they're emotionally invested in this feud, and they're not particularly worried about either guy and building either one.
Leon Ruff, your NXT North American champion, getting engaged to NXT referee, who was also a former talent, by the way, taking on Johnny Gargano and Damian Priest in a triple threat match. What did you think of Leon Ruff getting a win on the go-home show?
I mean, he needs wins. They need to present him as credible. Yeah, so it's better than him not getting a win. I just don't think they've done a very good job with him.
I agree.
Yeah.
You think Leon Ruff wins this. Does he win banana peel when the other two fight? Is it... a strong win for Leon Ruff?
No, it's going to be banana peel again. They're still not invested in the guy, and you see that in the entrance and everything. Like he's a punchline to them still. I think so. I think that's going to stay. But I think he's going to get a banana peel win. It might even be a banana peel win that like overhypes his confidence and makes him a dick.
Almost heelish. Yeah. That's the fear here. Yeah. And just like, God, can we build up an underdog to be a likeable
Yeah, can we just
fella?
Make me like this guy? Because, yeah, no, he's right on the edge of delusional baby face.
Here's how I think it goes down, just viewing it right now. I think eventually this three-way breaks down and Gargano and Priest end up teaming up to take out Ruff in a big spot, say like a table breakage or something to that effect, and those two fight. And then at some point, Ruff sneaks back in, throws out Gargano, pins Damian Priest for the win.
Oh, okay. Or
I
maybe...
I think Priest takes the fall here.
Yeah. And that builds to Leon Ruff versus Damian Priest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so we agree there. First of the two War Games matches on your card. Don't know where they'll be on the actual card, but the Undisputed Era, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish, they of the Blues Brothers Reservoir Dogs suits, going out to dinner, acting kind of faux horsemen. taking on... I love how they call this Team McAfee. I thought they were going to call them the Kings of NXT. But it is Pat McAfee.
And they're not best... for the brand? I thought they were for the brand.
Yeah. Pat McAfee, Pete Dunne, Danny Burch, and Oney Lorcan. I just love the simplicity of Pat McAfee saying, "We're great and you all suck."
Yep.
I think that is such a great heel move. I love his fake bravado. And then when Pete speaks, kind of the shock and awe on Pat McAfee's face as, "Holy crap, I got a killer on my team." And it just increases his bravado and also Danny Burch's. I thought this Undisputed Era vignette wasn't good. There was nothing to it.
There was nothing to it. Yeah, right. No, that I agree
Look,
with you.
They're
it
in
wasn't
suits
good.
And they're going out to eat, and they're and the problem is they're not talking like real people. They're talking about the thing, which is a killer in action movies and improv scenes of all varieties. Talking about the thing. "Hey guys, what are we gonna do in this War Games match? I don't know. Let's just fight people." Okay, that's great. There's no depth to it. There's nothing to this.
No, what you need is like Bobby Fish being like kind of a goofy jerk, trying to like pour pepper.
Showing some personality.
Yeah, each like trying to put salt onto everybody. Like he's like, "I'm gonna pour salt on you." You know, like that guy. Like they're actually having fun. Like the message you want to get across here is, unlike McAfee's team, which, as McAfee does a great job illustrating repeatedly in this promo, is a team that is not built around love. It's a team built around money. He doesn't actually even really like Lorcan and Burch. He only hired them because they took out his first assassin, and Pete Dunne, he likes Pete Dunne, but like Pete Dunne, it's clear, doesn't
but
like
Pete
him.
Dunne doesn't like anybody on that team.
Team, right. They're
he
there.
Has a personal vendetta against Roddy Strong and the rest of the Undisputed Era.
And the money's good. As McAfee likes to point out. So what needs to be contrasting
love me some
that.
Mercenary thinking. I love me mercenaries in wrestling, Chris. That's what
so
I love
what needs
about
to be
this.
Contrasting that is the Undisputed Era having love and friendship and like community and like support and it like there are all the things that are absent from McAfee's group. They aren't hot-shotted together like McAfee. This is a team that paid their dues and won through time. They're not fake. They're not allies of convenience. They're friends. Those are the contrasts that need to be there.
Yeah, and I think it really needs to go through Kyle O'Reilly.
Yes.
Who after the Finn Balor match, kind of got a nice rub as being, you know, tough guy who failed valiantly. I know at the time they're going to have Roddy and Fish turn on him, I think. But at the same time, also in this ladder match, failed valiantly while getting screwed out of that. He needs to be kind of brooding here, and the rest of the guys need to kind of be rallying around Kyle as, "Hey, look, we're still great. We haven't lost anything about this. We've been in every War Games since the inception. You know, we need to really..."
Oh, Adam Cole giving Kyle O'Reilly a big pep talk.
Yes.
And talking about how he really looks up to him. And how, like, for a long time, everyone from the outside looking in looked at him as the leader. And, you know, he was the champion and everything like that. But he always thought that Kyle was the toughest guy. And over the last month and a half or whatever, he's really seen that out of Kyle. And he really respects and admires him. And maybe end it with, like, "Hey, can you teach me that elbow thing?" Or something like that at the end of it. To just get over that Kyle is formidable. And and more importantly, that Adam Cole has shifted from back when he was champion. And now kind of is a little more humble, a little wiser, and a little more open and a better leader.
Who wins?
I think that McAfee's team wins.
Okay. I think I agree with you. I think McAfee's team wins. Do we see the dissolution of the Undisputed Era in the process?
Ooh, what would be interesting is if McAfee's paid off somebody in the UE like Roddy.
Okay. Do you think that happens? That's what I'm asking. Let's put it on the line. Let's make a little prop bet. Let's make it
interesting.
Does
Roddy get bought off? Is the Roddy betrayal? Yes. I'm going to say, like, yeah, I'm going to say it's Roddy who's the betrayer, and I'm going
to
say the Roddy
Back
betrayal.
Back to teaming with Pete Dunne after turning on him, huh? Because that's part of the story.
That would actually, okay, but that would actually make a really fun next chapter for McAfee trying to manage that.
Dunne and Roddy in the same
stable, and he's just trying to manage it all with money.
Oh, I love that idea.
No, that'd be really, I don't know if they do that, but that'd be really fun.
Yeah, I know it's fantasy booking.
I know, yeah, but it's intriguing. Yeah. Or I guess you could buy off Fish if you don't want to get that fancy pants with
Fish
it.
Is easy to beat.
Yeah,
and I don't
say
that. I don't say that derogatively, but he's always the guy who takes the fall if you need to. So I think McAfee's team wins. I will say nobody turns in this match because I think the women's war games is going to be convoluted as hell, and I'll tell you why in a second. But I think they just beat them straight up, and then there's dissension amongst the four of them. And they tell this story, and eventually they get back on the same page. And then we get to the women's War Games match. Team Shotzi. Shotzi Blackheart, Ember Moon, Rhea Ripley, and Io Shirai. No surprises forthcoming as yet. Versus Team Candice. Candice LeRae, Dakota Kai, Raquel Gonzalez, and Toni Storm. Shotzi Blackheart wins the person advantage in this match, which ruins the entire psychology of war games.
I know.
Unless you do one of two things. Somebody gets knocked out before the match, or there's a heel turn within it, or somehow the baby faces can't even the odds. Like, you gimmick the cage again, or something to that effect. And that's why I think this is going to be convoluted, because I think there's a story here, and I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be Rhea and Io not getting along. I don't know if it's going to be, like, my thought was possibly some heel gimmicks the babyface cage, which leads the first person in the war games, probably Io, to be stuck with a 4-on-1 beatdown. And then eventually they get the other people freed and becomes 4-on-4 the match beyond. Or you get Indy Hartwell coming into the cage to make it 5-on-4. This can't go on straight.
Yeah.
All right.
So I think I've got it. So the advantage for the babyface can be turned into a disadvantage because there are more heels outside of the cage than inside of the cage. So the heels can get out of their holding cage and attack the babyfaces who are still stuck out. So essentially, like, you turn what would be the man advantage into the man disadvantage outside, and the heels gain advantage on the outside. Because I don't know who's the betrayer out of these four. Like, maybe there's some dissension between Io or Rhea or something like that. Maybe.
I hope to God they don't turn Rhea heel.
I know. Right. I mean, they might do that because they've been lazy with how they book her. But, like,
and it was terrible. Bringing in her own personal self-doubt after that terrible booking of her in WrestleMania. Why would you do that to a person you want to be a star?
Because you don't want them to be a star.
A
person who is very obviously star level talent. I want to make it clear. I like Rhea Ripley and think she is a star. It's just, if you don't book them like that, then, you know, they are what they are.
I mean, when this was originally a TBA instead of Io Shirai, I thought possibly Sasha Banks as number four, because this is, you know, the kind of the Kevin Owens, but this run of Sasha is to keep her happy. And I know she really kind of wants to do these types of things, these legendary matches like War Games. I just don't know. I feel like this is going to be way overbooked. And after last year,
a match with Shotzi Blackheart. Really? You think that's going to be overbooked?
Oh, she got her tank. She has superpowers.
I'll tell you, she's good in a ladder match. Like, there are certain, she has certain.
She's good in the hardcore garbage matches.
Yeah,
where she has to do stunts.
She's got a charisma about her. She works for some of this branding stuff. Like, there are lots of things that Shotzi does well. I will give her that.
I just think after last year and and the real, I mean, it was convoluted booking, but it was fun watching the Tegan Nox turn that Dakota Kai did, and, you know, seeing a 4-on-2, but you know, it's usually you have to do that 1 year and then you have to kind of back off and do the normal 4-on-4. I just don't see how you do that with the baby faces having the advantage, because it ruins the psychology. And I think Rhea turns on her team. That's my only, I think the big spot here is that Indy Hartwell at some point comes into the ring and Ember does the eclipse off the top of the cage. That'll be my call. I think Io Shirai does a moonsault at some point off the top of the cage, but I think also we get an eclipse off the top of the cage at some point. I'll call that spot.
You know, you just reminded me of a thing that I almost failed to mention, and I think it's worth mentioning because it was almost not memorable at all, which was Jeff Hardy once again nearly killed himself during a meaningless match here this week.
The Symphony of Destruction match?
Yeah.
Completely glossed over because I have no interest in it.
No, I have no interest in it, but like, he nearly killed himself with that ladder.
Yes.
Yeah, that was insane.
Yes. Well, you know, it's big moments. Got to get those big moments in, but yeah. Jeff killing himself as a 40-something year old man who they think is 20. He's not indestructible.
It's hard to watch now.
Yes.
It makes me uncomfortable. I heard commentary get kind of uneasy calling that spot. Watching them play it back and rewatching it, I don't like watching him do this to himself, especially for nothing. For nothing. In these
yes.
nothing matches.
Yes, because he has a limit now and he's not the superstar he once was. And they make him go out there and act like the 20-year-old Jeff Hardy still. But we're getting off track here, and the booze is flowing. So time is not on my side.
Okay.
Okay. It feels like the psychology of this match is babyface's win to get back at the destruction of Shotzi's tank. I feel like that reveal's coming, Chris. I feel like that's part of this match.
Oh, maybe Indy Hartwell gets ran over by the tank.
I hope Rhea Ripley does not go heel. Although, I would be here for a Rhea Ripley, Raquel Gonzalez women's tag team title run as Twin Towers killing fools. But you got Toni Storm on this heel team, and you got to keep her strong too, I think. So, give me your pick, and I'll try and rationalize.
I think babyfaces win this. This company does like Shotzi Blackheart as a branding tool, and that's what I'm gonna stick with. I'm gonna stick with the Shotzi being the driver here, and she's the star of this match.
Is there a heel turn, or is it just we get 5-on-4 with Indy Hartwell coming in?
Yeah, I think Indy Hartwell comes in and evens the odds. Maybe she gets into the ring really early.
She comes in as part of Team Candace, and they say, well, it's not against the rules because it's no DQ.
Right. And they just more importantly, the match hasn't started yet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The match beyond hasn't started yet. Okay.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I will go with you on that pick. I will say that babyfaces win. I do not think there will be a heel turn either, but I do think the 5-on-4 will nullify the babyfaces man advantage. That's going to do it for us. We'd like to thank MyBookie once again. Use code ROPES. Double your first deposit. Everybody, please stay safe out there. I'm a little emotional over what's happening in Los Angeles and the lockdowns. But I will not be seeing my family this year for Christmas. Make the sacrifices you need out there. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at ChrisNovembrino. You can follow the show at ShakeThemRopes. How heavy is politics right now for your don't worry about the government, Chris?
You know, December's always a little, it's a little bit lighter because, you know, like holiday season and all that stuff. But I actually got on the video side over at patreon.com/DWATG, there's like 2 video episodes up. It looks like now, because I'm working during the week, I will be taping stuff and then get around to actually editing the audio here over the weekends. But there'll be two new episodes out here. And if you want to hear me talk about Neurotandon, who doesn't want to hear about Neurotandon? Who doesn't love talking about Neurotandon? You can hear that over on YouTube right now. There's a YouTube clip from episode 493 up there. So go and check that out if you want to hear me talk about her.
Thank you, Chris.